So, right now, nearly 14% of the entire United States retail construction pipeline is happening in just one market, which is Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah, it's honestly staggering when you look at the actual numbers.
It really is. I mean, while the national headlines are, hyperventilating about inflation fears and interest rate turbulence
Right.
and the supposed death of brick and mortar, developers are just quietly pouring concrete across Texas at this historic rate. So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are opening up the underlying data to figure out exactly why Texas is defying national gravity and where the smart money is actually hiding right now.
Exactly. And we're pulling from a pretty massive stack of commercial real estate news
Yeah.
spanning late August to early September of 2026.
Right. And if you are deploying capital in this space, you know that understanding the localized mechanics of these trends is, well, it's everything, which is exactly what we do every single day at Eureka Business Group. We focus entirely on being the premier authority and commercial real estate broker in the DFW retail market. So our mission for this deep dive is to basically look past that surface level panic, unpackage the raw data, and map out the ground level realities of how commercial retail is functioning today.
Yeah, so the overarching narrative we're seeing across all these August and September sources is that the commercial retail market has, it's effectively split into two entirely different universes.
Okay, how so?
Well, first, you have this severe bifurcation in asset quality. Buyers are paying absolute top dollar for safety.
Right.
Then you have this highly motivated pool of 1031 exchange investors operating under extreme, ticking clock pressure.
Yeah.
And that's forcing some very specific behavioral shifts in how inventory gets absorbed.
Like musical chairs, basically.
Exactly. And then third, you have the sheer gravity of the Texas market, specifically DFW, which is operating on its own fundamentals, entirely detached from that national anxiety.
So if you understand those mechanics, the flight to quality, the pressure of tax-deferred capital, and the leasing strategies in Texas, you basically get a blueprint of the next decade.
That's it. That's the playbook.
Okay, so let's start with that first point. Let's look at the clearest pricing signal out there right now, which is this split in the net lease retail sector. We've got data from Globist and the Boulder Group showing that first half 2026 net lease retail transaction volume hit $6.4 billion.
Yeah, 6.4 billion. But, that aggregate number hides a pretty wild divergence.
Right, because overall single tenant cap rates have ticked up to 6.82%. But then you look at premium convenience, right?
Yeah.
Quick service restaurants, investment grade
Oh,
assets.
yeah. Investors are willingly paying a massive premium for those. They're accepting yields as low as 4.45% for, like, McDonald's and Chick-fil-A ground leases.
Which is wild. They're accepting sub 5% returns just for that ironclad guarantee that the rent check will clear every month. It's like a VIP room where the cover charge keeps going up, but everyone still wants in because the rest of the club is just too risky.
That is a perfect analogy. And a big part of that is because investment grade product now makes up less than 10% of total retail supply.
Wow. Less than 10%.
Yeah. So when you have this tidal wave of institutional capital chasing less than a tenth of the available inventory, I mean, the pricing tightens dramatically.
So wait, what about that Seven Brew deal, the $143 million transaction where they took over 73 former Salad and Go sites? When an investor looks at a valuation like that for a drive-through coffee concept, is that purely about the corporate credit backing the lease, or is there something else driving that demand?
It is fundamentally a real estate play, specifically what the industry is pricing right now as a scarcity premium for irreplaceable drive-through infrastructure.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the credit matters, of course, but investors are realizing that, commerce algorithms cannot replicate the physical convenience of handing a hot latte through a car window on a morning commute.
Right, you can't download a coffee.
Exactly. And those highly trafficked, easily accessible pads are finite. You can see this appetite for durability playing out on a larger scale too, like with the Broadstone deal in Manor, Texas.
Oh, right, the one with Hobby Lobby and Academy Sports.
Yeah, they just signed 15-year leases on 55,000 square foot build-to-suit projects. And the telling detail there, the thing you really have to look at is the escalators.
What were they?
The rent only increases 0.5% annually for Hobby Lobby and 0.4% for Academy.
Wow, barely anything.
Right. Investors are looking at those microscopic growth rates and just accepting them. They are deliberately choosing a decade and a half of flat, predictable income over the risk of chasing a higher yield with a less reliable tenant.
And I imagine that appetite for safety turns into outright desperation when you factor in the buyers operating under a strict 1031 exchange deadline.
Oh, absolutely. It's a completely different pressure cooker.
For sure, because Section 131 lets you defer capital gains taxes on a property sale, but only if you roll the proceeds into a new property, and you only have a 45-day window to identify that target.
Which goes by in a flash.
Yeah, it really is a high-stakes game of musical chairs. But the good news for you and the sources is that Section 131 remains fully intact. There are no dollar caps following the July 2025 One Big Beautiful Bill Act.
Yeah, the OBBA.
Right. So the tax deferral vehicle is safe. And to supply chairs for this game, sale leaseback volume is just booming. Like 178 deals worth $4.57 billion in just the second quarter of 2026.
And exchanges are scooping that inventory up instantly. Like a newly built Sheetz in Ohio was bought for $3.4 million in an all-cash 131 execution.
All cash. Wow.
Yeah, and ExchangeRight had a $63.34 million Delaware statutory trust portfolio become fully subscribed, like right away. It completely removed those fractional ownership shares from the market.
So, putting myself in the shoes of an investor for a second, let's say I've got just days left on my 45-day identification period.
Okay.
If all the pristine, fee simple properties where you actually own the dirt are taken or just way too expensive, shouldn't I just grab a high yield leasehold property to satisfy the exchange just to save the tax deferral?
No, the sources actually offer a very clear warning against making that exact compromise. Kolobist specifically points to the Valencia Town Center as a cautionary tale for what they call a leasehold reality check.
A reality check, because with a leasehold, you're not actually buying the land.
Exactly. The mechanics of a leasehold mean you are only buying the right to collect the income stream from the physical building for a predetermined number of years. You do not own the underlying dirt.
Got it.
So when you're sweating a 45-day deadline, a leasehold with a 9% headline cap rate looks incredibly tempting compared to like a 5% fee simple property.
Right, 9% looks great on paper.
It does. But that yield obscures an immense structural risk. You have to underwrite the tenant rollover, the rights of the fee owner beneath you, and crucially, the ultimate terminal value.
Because when the lease ends.
When that ground lease eventually expires, the physical building usually reverts back to the landowner. That leaves the leasehold investor holding an asset worth exactly zero.
Ouch.
Yeah. Contractual yield means very little if the residual real estate value just evaporates at the end of the term. You are almost always better off paying the premium for fee simple real estate where you control the dirt.
Rather than buying a depreciating timer on an income stream just to beat an IRS deadline.
Precisely.
Okay, so if leasehold properties are this potential trap for panicked capital, the obvious question is, where can investors park their money to find actual structural durability? Which, perfectly explains the current obsession with the DFW market and the wider Texas economy.
Yes, our absolute specialty at Eureka Business Group.
Right. And the occupancy numbers here are staggering. DFW retail held a record 95.3% mid-year occupancy.
It's incredible.
And it's expanding at a breakneck pace. We're looking at a 7.7 million square foot retail pipeline right now. To put that in context, the entire US retail construction pipeline is 56.1 million.
Yeah, so basically, 14% of the country's retail development is happening right here.
It's huge, and we're seeing massive capital deployments, like the $120 million Shivers Farm mega project breaking ground in Southlake, anchored by Whole Foods.
Yep, and Phillips Edison acquiring the shops at Prosper Trail while it was 100% leased.
Oh, and Target opening its first store in the Liberty Hill Growth Corridor northwest of Austin, acting as a magnet for smaller shops. But wait, if millions of new square feet are constantly being delivered to the market, how does occupancy stay at 95.3%? I mean, is this purely a byproduct of the relentless Texas population growth, or has the leasing strategy actually changed?
Well, the population growth definitely provides the baseline fuel, but the occupancy retention is being driven by a highly evolved, hyper-targeted leasing strategy. Developers aren't just building generic strip malls and hoping random tenants show up anymore. They are intentionally curating ecosystems anchored by internet-resistant daily needs drivers, primarily grocery and fitness.
Right, because you go to those every week.
Exactly. When you anchor a center with a Whole Foods or a high-end gym, you are mechanically guaranteeing hundreds of cars pulling into that parking lot every single day. So the inline spaces surrounding those anchors, the nail salons, the quick service restaurants, the boutique medical users.
They fill up instantly.
Exactly, because the landlord has essentially manufactured a captive, daily audience for them. And we're also seeing this active curation save older regional retail, too.
Like the Longview Mall project.
Yes. The sources highlight Trademark's repositioning of that 646,000-square-foot mall in East Texas. Instead of letting the asset slowly decay as legacy retailers struggle, they are actively tearing out weak, outdated space and aggressively replacing it.
With destination tenants, right? Like they're bringing in Barnes & Noble and Pandora.
Exactly. They are treating the center like a living organism, continually pruning the dead weight and reinvesting in the physical plan so it stays the dominant economic hub for that specific trade area.
And exploring who is actually taking over that older, pruned space reveals exactly how the consumer economy is shifting. I mean, the tenant mix is unrecognizable compared to 10 years ago.
Well, completely.
The August data shows the ISM services index rising to 55.4, which indicates that consumer dollars are heavily favoring services and experiences over traditional physical goods.
Yeah, the data is super clear on that. Specialty grocers are a prime example. Trader Joe's is executing a $29 million development deal in Virginia, actively stealing market share from discount grocers among higher-income households.
And it's not just groceries. We're seeing childcare footprints expanding rapidly, with the Learning Experience adding 60,000 square feet in Sacramento. Hardware is booming as this internet-resistant category aids hardware. It's on track to open more than 170 stores in 2026.
And down in Texas, off-price retail is acting as the primary backfill for these massive boxes. Ross is taking over a former Melrose Family Fashions in Mission, and Marshalls is moving into a former Whataburger University in San Antonio.
It kind of forces you to look at a vacant, aging department store, not as dead space, but as a blank canvas. Just a structural shell ready for a completely different use case.
Yeah.
Like, the ultimate example in the briefing is that premium fitness concept Club Studio taking over a former Bloomingdale's at Santa Monica Place. That completely redefines what a mall anchor looks like.
It does. And experiential, wellness, and service-oriented users are absolutely the most viable backfill candidates for those large boxes today, because consumers are prioritizing their health, daily conveniences, and experiences over just accumulating more apparel.
Right.
However, this shift requires a completely different underwriting discipline from the property owner.
What?
Well, evaluating a high-end fitness center, taking over a former department store, is not the same as evaluating a clothing retailer. The actual mechanics of the real estate change. A concept like Club Studio requires heavy, specialized capital expenditure.
Oh, like plumbing and stuff.
Exactly. Upgraded plumbing for dozens of showers, commercial HVAC systems tailored for sweaty fitness environments, and structurally reinforced floors for heavy free weights.
Right. You can't just put that in a normal retail box.
Exactly. So while the daily foot traffic these concepts generate is highly desirable, landlords must carefully structure the tenant improvement allowances. You have to relentlessly scrutinize the corporate guarantee backing the lease to ensure that the massive upfront capital you were sinking into that specific build-out actually pencils out over the term of the agreement.
Because if a high-end gym goes bankrupt in year three, the next tenant probably doesn't need 50 showers and reinforced concrete.
Exactly. Meaning your residual value takes a heavy hit.
Yep.
Which brings us to the actual mechanics of financing these capital-intensive evolutions in today's tricky economic climate. The market is kind of caught in a macro squeeze right now.
It really is.
I mean, the consumer engine is undeniably still running. The August data shows 162,000 jobs added and unemployment sitting at a very healthy 4.1%.
Yeah, very resilient.
But the capital markets are turbulent. There's a 66% probability of a September Federal Reserve rate hike hanging over everyone's head, which creates all this turbulence for debt costs.
Right. But despite that threat, deals are still clearing the market. Like a five-tenant retail center in Frisco was recently financed with a five-year non-recourse loan locked in at a 7% fixed rate.
Okay, but let me push back on that for a second. If there is a 66% chance the Fed hikes rates in September and Treasury yields are elevated, why wouldn't a private buyer just pause, you know, sit on their cash, wait a year or two for the turbulence to settle, and then re-enter the market when cheaper debt returns?
The data clearly suggests that waiting on the sidelines for cheaper debt is a losing strategy in a fundamentally strong market.
Really?
Yeah. The briefing includes this vital report from Progressive Real Estate out in the Inland Empire, and it observes that successful investors are no longer relying on future rate cuts as their central investment thesis.
Ah, so they're just accepting the new normal.
Exactly. We're operating in an era of normalized pricing. If you refuse to deploy capital until 3% interest rates magically return, you are likely going to miss out on a decade of compounding growth and asset appreciation.
So what's the advice for investors then?
The structural advice here is to strictly underwrite your acquisitions to today's debt realities and today's exit assumptions. You cannot justify a thin going-in yield by banking on a future refinancing windfall that may never arrive.
That makes a lot of sense.
And, you know, the underwriting doesn't stop at the interest rate. It extends to the corporate tenant, too. We are seeing major M&A activity across the sector, like Yum Brands selling Pizza Hut for $1.5 billion or the apparel brand UNTUCKit being acquired.
Right, and when a corporate parent changes hands, everything changes.
Overnight, the underlying credit profile, the expansion strategy, the strength of the lease guarantee, holding your cash flow together, all of it can change. Landlords have to continually reevaluate their tenants' parent-level risk and adjust their own risk models accordingly.
So when you synthesize all of this data, a very clear picture emerges for the commercial real estate investor. The headlines will continue to obsess over rate hikes and national economic anxiety, but the ground-level mechanics show tangible, highly concentrated opportunity.
Absolutely.
And that opportunity favors those who target resilient, e-commerce-resistant, well-anchored multi-tenant strips, particularly in high-growth, business-friendly corridors like DFW. Navigating the severely bifurcated market requires an intricate understanding of localized fundamentals.
Yeah, you have to know exactly why a 4.45% cap rate makes perfect sense in one zip code, nope, while a 9% leasehold yield is total trap in another.
Exactly. And that localized expertise is precisely why Eureka Business Group is your ideal partner for commercial retail real estate in Texas. Yeah. They understand the structural mechanics behind the data. So thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep looking past the surface-level news, because the real advantage always lies in understanding the mechanisms underneath.
Yeah, and before you go, consider one final development from the sources that perfectly illustrates how the mechanics of retail are quietly evolving. Major operators like Walmart and Buc-ee's are rapidly rolling out electric vehicle fast charging stations across their real estate portfolios.
And they're doing this despite the recent pullbacks in government EV policy.
Exactly. They're doing this because the mechanics of a charging station drastically alter customer behavior. It turns what used to be a quick 5-minute stop into a captive 45-minute shopping and dining event.
Wow, right, because you have to sit there and wait for the car to charge.
Exactly. So as these charging networks turn vast, previously unproductive parking lots, into vital revenue-generating community infrastructure, it raises this fascinating question to consider.
What's that?
Are we rapidly approaching a reality where the utility and infrastructure of a retail property's parking lot might actually outvalue the physical building sitting on it?